Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. As we rotate through the New York City mayoral candidates, former Comptroller Bill Thompson will be with us in just a minute. And I should say that this was already scheduled before yesterday's Anthony Weiner revelations. But Thompson may be the person most affected by this, other than the Weiner family itself. Polls have indicated that if the primary was held yesterday, Weiner and Quinn would have been the two to make the runoff. Without Weiner, it would be Quinn and Bill Thompson. So with that as backdrop, we'll talk to Bill Thompson about the Weiner news and other things coming up in just a minute. But as we await Bill Thompson getting to his phone, we can open the phones for just a minute, and we'll cut this as short as we need to for now when Bill Thompson is ready to go. But with your reactions to the latest Anthony Weiner news, a little later in the program we'll do a longer call-in, but I'm going to ask for the same people now who I will ask for later, and that is those of you who, as of yesterday, supported Anthony Weiner for mayor. So there's the question. If you supported Anthony Weiner yesterday at this time, do you still support him today? 212-433-WNYC. Do I see that Bill Thompson's ready to go? Can I ask control room? Is Bill Thompson ready to go? All right. Well, I can't tell. So if you supported Weiner for mayor yesterday, do you support him today, given what took place in the last 24 hours? And all right, Bill Thompson is ready to go. So we will do this phone call, this call-in, a little bit later in the show. Bill Thompson, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you. And so let me start by asking your reaction to the latest Anthony Weiner news. Are they relevant, these revelations, in your opinion, to the voters' decisions about who to vote for?
Well, you know, I think that as we look, and yes, I guess, stunned and kind of, disgusted by yesterday's revelations. The one thing about mayoral elections is they're supposed to be about the future of the city of New York. And that's what you want that discussion to be about, you know, about housing and jobs and education and so many other things that affect the people of this city. And it's clear that, you know, that right now it is about anything but the future of New York City. So was I surprised and stunned? Yes. And it is unfortunate those conversations now continue to be about things other than the people of the city of New York.
And so the Times editorial board and some other candidates, though not including the other major Democrats so far, are calling on Weiner to drop out of the race. Do you want to join that chorus?
You know, you don't want to leap in and kind of pile on. This is one of those situations I think it is important. Anthony cares about the city of New York. Then he should take that into consideration. You should consider the city of New York, you know, and think about the people of this city, and make the right decision, you know, that is good for the people of the city of New York, not necessarily good for him, or not about him. He needs to make it about us and about the people of this city, and then turn around and do the right thing. So this is one of those I'm not necessarily going to pile on. I'm going to say there has been and continues to be, I guess, kind of a growing consensus that he should not continue in this race. I'm just going to ask, I'm suggesting to him that he look at what's going on around him, understand that what this has done to a serious discussion about the future of New York City, and then do the right thing.
And listeners, why don't you post your answer to that question to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Should Anthony Weiner drop out of the race? And if you supported Weiner yesterday at this time, do you still support him today? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take calls on this in a little while. But Bill Thompson, mayoral hopeful, is with us right now, and so on to other issues. After the George Zimmerman verdict, I looked at and read on the air the tweets of all the mayoral candidates, and yours was, I would say, the most racially blunt. You wrote, "Trayvon Martin was killed because he was black. There was no justice done in Florida today." Can you talk about why you wrote explicitly Trayvon Martin was killed because he was black?
Well, I think that that was, if he was not black, if he wouldn't have been a black teenager, I think we all would agree that he would be alive today. I think that if you, you know, honestly, there was a lot of watching that trial and understanding what happened and feeling it very personally as a black man and looking at this. It could have been, you know, I think that the president later in the week, you know, best summarized it. You know, initially he had said it could have been, you know, his one of his children. Yeah, and it could have been one of my children. But it also could have been, it could have been me also. And I think that's the thing. It was very personal. It was something that I think people across the city and across the country felt, and that justice had not been served in Florida. And if anything, and I think that is the growing consensus across this country, is that, you know, the justice was not served. If you looked as if people, you know, whether people felt it personally or not, I think people all across this country, people of good conscience, people who want to see, you know, justice served, you know, believe that it was wrong what occurred there. And I think, you know, as I said, that the president, when he came out last Friday, I was very proud of his statement, very proud of the president for coming out and making it and just letting people who might not have understood understand that in a number of ways, it was felt very personally by a number of people.
And later in the program today, we'll be playing some excerpts from the president's speech on race on Friday and using those excerpts to start a conversation that we'll have for part of the show. But, you know, on the Zimmerman case, the prosecution never made a racial argument, as you know, and the jury found he was killed at the precise moment Trayvon was because he was in a fight with Zimmerman. Would your position be different if you were the mayor of the city of New York and a case like this were to happen here, which it certainly could, with or without stand your ground laws? Would you feel as comfortable saying justice was not done in a New York City courtroom when you were mayor of the city of New York?
Obviously, you know, the circumstances and facts in New York would be very different. I think the stand your ground law complicated things and created a ridiculous situation that in the end George Zimmerman is able to say that he was standing his ground and protecting himself when at every turn he'd been told to stop. He'd been told to back off. He was told to leave Trayvon Martin alone. And I think all of those things together, you know, created a very different fact pattern. And in New York City, you know, we're not going to tolerate some vigilante, you know, a community watch person sitting there rolling around with a gun and assaulting whether, you know, it was a fight. He was following a teenager in New York City. We wouldn't have allowed that. And I think that there are, you know, huge differences between Florida and stand your ground and the laws that exist there. And I think that's one of the things that has also come out of this. It is the need, and, you know, I was at the rally on Saturday with Trayvon Martin's mother and Reverend Sharpton. I think it was also, we need to, you know, there are laws like that around the country. They need to be repealed and what has occurred. And then when you have people like John McCain who said, you know something, yeah, we may need to take a look at laws like that, at the Stand Your Ground law, and repeal it and get rid of it because of how dangerous it's become.
On a related local issue, Mayor Bloomberg yesterday vetoed, actually, do I have that right? Was the actual veto yesterday? I think it was.
I believe it was.
The two city council bills on race and the NYPD, one to make it easier to sue for people who think they've been racially profiled by a cop, and the other to create an inspector general for the NYPD. That's not explicitly racial, but that inspector general would be appointed by the mayor. Do you support either bill at this point?
I have not supported either bill, not in their current configuration. I believe as mayor, I would make sure when we look at the misuse and abuse of stop and frisk, I would bring that to an end and would not need necessarily an inspector general to bring that about. I just think that the way stop and frisk has been used, it is basically been, you know, by a Ray Kelly, Mike Bloomberg administration. It's been misused and abused. People have been targeted and people have been stopped and frisked because of who they are and what they look like, and that is wrong. And as mayor, I would make sure that no longer continued, as well as profiling is illegal. Those who would engage in profiling as, you know, I don't need the opportunity or you know, the additional, let's sue the city of New York. If you're an officer, number one, we'd work on training. and make sure that my police commissioner and the officers who work for me understood that we're not going to allow people to be profiled in the city of New York. So I've been very clear. I think this is, you know, as I said, I understand the council bills. There have been, you know, such problems under the Ray Kelly's watch as police commissioner that people have been pushed to do this. But I believe as the next mayor, I would not allow profiling in the city of New York, and I definitely would not allow this continued misuse of stop and frisk.
Police Commissioner Kelly wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal yesterday saying rather than picking on people of color, I'm not sure he put it exactly that way, but the gist was rather than picking on people of color, his policies have saved the lives of people of color because with the murder rate declining so much, that's mostly who's not getting killed in the historically high crime neighborhoods. How much do you disagree with that?
Strongly. I think that the one thing, and there's been this, you know, people have tried to say that, you know, because people of color, because blacks and Latinos happy with the way stop and frisk has been used because they've been the targets of a bad policy or really of a policing tool that has become policy in the city of New York that somehow they're, you know, not against crime. People in black and Latino communities have been the targets of crime, and they want to see crime go down. They want their neighborhoods to be safe. At the same point, it is to make the assumption that we can't drive crime down and at the same point preserve the constitutional safeguards that people are entitled to. We can do both. So, you know, the argument that Commissioner Kelly makes is a flawed one, and it continues to be flawed, and it continues along the same vein as the mayor in talking about, well, we probably haven't stopped enough blacks and Latinos in the city of New York. It continues to be flawed policy.
Part of the national conversation on race that President Obama addressed in his speech on Friday, and we'll be talking about this with some callers later in the show specifically, was the reality that young black men like Trayvon Martin have statistically a lot more to fear from other young black men than they do from a New York City police officer or a neighborhood watch captain. And yet the media and politicians seem to focus much more outrage on the latter. I would imagine that if we did a content analysis of all the words spoken by all the Democratic mayoral hopefuls this year, there would be a lot more said criticizing stop and frisk than talking about how much better you're going to be at fighting crime than the other guys. That goes for each of you. So how would you address that question, which is an especially widespread perception among whites?
You know, I think that if you look, there have been many comments and outrage expressed over shootings of, you know, black youth by other black youth. It hasn't been something that's ignored. It is something that, you know, if you go back and look, safety and security in communities, last year, you know, with working along with the National Action Network, Occupy the Corners, talking about, you know, making sure the communities are safer, involving community residents more in speaking out against violence in their communities. All of that continues, and I think that in the end it is a realization that we've got to get guns out of our neighborhoods and pushing to get that done across New York City and around the country, but pushing in New York City to say we're not going to tolerate gun violence, we're not going to tolerate violence within communities. I've been one of those who's indicated that violence needs to end, and I think it is part of, you know, a larger approach. It is in fighting against guns. It is understanding that in a lot of ways we're going to have to do things like creating more jobs for young people, that we're going to have to look at other. It's not just saying stop doing this. It is creating the opportunities for them to have other, for them to be able to do other things, jobs, education, so many other things. That works as a deterrent also when it comes to violence. It is looking at things in a larger frame and a larger framework and then addressing it that way. So I've talked about, you know, reducing violence, making sure our young people have greater ideas and values when it comes to self-worth. But you can do that also through pushing and criminal enforcement to a number of other programs, but also education, jobs and job creations and job training. All of that goes hand in hand.
Former comptroller and current New York City mayoral hopeful Bill Thompson with us for another few minutes. In the polls that have come out recently, both Quinn and Weiner were beating you among African Americans. Weiner was number one. Will you be a pundit about your own race for a minute and tell us why you think that is?
Look, I think that we have seen bad polling, for years. You know, if you go back and look at mayoral campaigns, You know, whether it's 2001 races, 2005 races, my own race in 2009 that had Mike Bloomberg, I think 2 days out, supposedly even with me with black voters in the city of New York, and I wound up winning there 3-1. I'm not concerned about the polls. I think we've shown over a period of time how inaccurate they are. I'm confident that if I continue to reach out and speak out about issues that affect black communities, Latino communities, and all communities across the city of New York, I'm going to do well, and I'm going to be the next mayor of the city of New York. So I think that, you know, the polls that have consistently said things like 2 days out, I think they had, you know, in the 2009 race that I had against Mike Bloomberg, it was going to be a blowout. Meanwhile, we were looking at some very different numbers. I have, at this point, I'm confident that if I continue to reach out and speak about issues that impact black, Latino, and white communities across the city of New York, I'm going to do well.
Before you go, I want to ask you, as a former controller, about Detroit and whether New York could ever suffer the same fate. Of course, we had financial meltdown in the 70s. An issue in Detroit is the unfunded health and pension liabilities owed to city workers and retirees. Bill Keller's column in the New York Times on Monday reminded us of New York City's own current unfunded pension and health liabilities for city workers. In health benefits alone, $90 billion, according to former Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, who follows these things. That's more than last year's entire city budget. How much of a challenge will that be for you if you're the next mayor, and how will you deal with it?
Well, I think is it going to be a challenge? Sure. And the one thing that everybody should, you know, the comparisons between New York and Detroit. New York, if you go back into the mid-1970s, New York City almost was Detroit. But we have turned the corner. We've created real fiscal and you know, fiscal transparency and accountability. So, no, we're not going to wind up being Detroit ever. And as, you know, as former controller and hopefully the next mayor of the city of New York, we are not going to go down that path. I think we're all going to have to, you know, we're going to have to work together with our municipal unions. We're going to have to continue to make sure that, you know, that we can do a few things, that the people of the city of New York continue to be protected and, you know, and with fiscal stability also, and that we work along with the unions to come up with fiscal solutions, because you're looking at every union contract, and it is something that the mayor has left us. You know, at the end of this year, every contract will have expired. We have to make sure that, you know, that in the long run, that we create that balance. And I think it's possible to do. You've got hundreds of millions of dollars of outsourced contracts. We need to start to work on that. We also need to be able to, you know, take a look at our pension funds and, you know, the way that we are penalized for down markets and not able to take as much advantage in the up markets. We have to create that balance also. So I think there are a lot of things that we can do to make sure to bring that balance about, to be able to make sure that New York City, you know, our finances stay stable. And that's what we are going to do. And one of the things that we're not going to do is to sacrifice that moving forward. We have to stay fiscally strong. And I think that the municipal unions, as well as the people of the city of New York, understand that and believe in that.
And we're asking the question all this week on air and online, has Mayor Bloomberg made us richer? He's a rich guy himself, obviously, and people probably elected him as much to get us out of the economic holes that the financial crisis and 9/11 left us in, respectively, before those two particular elections, as for any other reason. Has Mayor Bloomberg made us richer?
Well, it appears as if a few people have been made richer, but I think that the reality is that New Yorkers are struggling. When you look at the real numbers, half of the people in the city of New York are at or near the poverty line. So, you know, you look at new immigrants and those who are poor in the city of New York, they're working 2 and 3 jobs, and they're not advancing. You look at working New Yorkers, working class New Yorkers, they are struggling each and every day. Middle class New Yorkers fighting to hold on. I think the majority of us are not better off, at least financially, than we were years ago. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I want to be mayor, to make sure that New York City becomes that city of opportunity, that city of hope for all New Yorkers, because right now it isn't doing that.
Bill Thompson, thanks as always. We'll keep talking.
Thanks, Brian. Always good talking to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, advice for fast food worker nation. I'll say that again. Advice for fast food worker nation. How to survive your minimum wage life. Stay with us.